Hello and welcome to the Managing Madrid podcast. This is the mailbag edition. I'm your host, Kian Sobani. And in a little shifting of roles here, I'm actually hosting Gabe Lesra, who's joining me. Gabe is our regular host, and he's going to help me answer these mailbag questions. Gabe, how are you, man?
I'm doing well. I've got a little bit of a sore throat, but I'm very excited to be here and take some questions. And I'm trying to make up for missing the show over the weekend, but I just had to come on after watching the week's games. It's been a pretty good couple days, guys. So, Kian, I'm excited to chat about this stuff.
We have a lot to talk about, and not much time to squeeze it all in. So we're going to get right into it. So these questions are, you know, some of these questions go back to before the game against Wolfsburg, and then they just came flooding in after we beat Wolfsburg and then after yesterday's crazy, crazy game at the Calderon where Atletico knocked out Barcelona. So let's just get right into it. The first question is Ryan. He asks, which country do you think are going to shine in the next World Cup? This is, he admitted as well, it's an off-topic question, but do you have any thoughts on this, Gabe? I mean, it's crazy to think we actually have a Euro tournament this summer. Like, it's not even on my radar.
Yeah, that's, I mean, I've been thinking about it a little bit because I love even years because there's always international football on. I'm a person that, so the next World Cup is a different question from the next international tournament. So, right, so
that's true.
The next Euro Cup, my money, It's such a tough question. I think my money's on Germany still. I think they have to be the favorite going in after their pretty dominant performance at the Brazil World Cup. But I think that France actually has a pretty exciting team there. And I don't think Spain is going to do very well again. So those are my three hot takes on the Euro Cup.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I would also add England to the mix. I just feel like they have some excitement with Vardy and Kane, like those. That's probably one of the most fun striker duos on the planet right now. So,
yeah, that's
cool. Yeah. So we're gonna move on. This question, I almost don't feel like answering it, but we'll take it. So Tanner Denny asks, who would be the best and worst replacement for Zizou if he is sacked at the end of the season?
This seems like a question that was asked before the Wolfsburg match, but
yeah, it was.
yeah, man, I think that we've mentioned a couple names before. I'm partial to a lot of coaches out there. I don't know. I don't know who the best replacement is because we've cycled through so many great coaches for Madrid over the last couple years. I think the next one that seems clear, like the next one that is the current coach of the German national team whose name is eluding me for some reason.
Joachim Low, right?
Yeah. I think that he might be the next choice. But truth is, I'm not sure this team needs a new coach.
I agree. This is why it's so hard for me to answer this question. Because even if we hadn't beat Wolfsburg, I would have wanted Zizou to continue and, you know, go through some losing if we need to. Just let Zizou try to figure it out for the next year or two.
Exactly.
Can come up with.
He's a good player. He's a good coach, I think. I think we've already seen his effect on the team, right? So the hope is that, you know, the hope is that he has a longer leash, being that he's a Madrid legend already, and he has some popularity, right, with the press and with the fans and the board. I mean, one would hope.
Yeah, I genuinely believe there will be riots in Madrid if Zidane is sacked at some point. Which, you know, like, if that day comes, which, you know, very well could in the next year or two, I just feel like Zidane is one of the most well-respected people in the entire city.
So I would join, like, those riots, yes.
I will join you as well. We'll go together. So TedBot311 asks, what are your thoughts on the rising popularity of the EPL and its impact on the Champions League? What impact?
Yeah. Look, Manchester City, in a, what I thought was a very surprising move, made it through. I don't think there's much else to say. I think the EPL has proven themselves to be pretty damn bad at purchasing players and creating squad that are competitive in Europe. I think that Spurs Spurs are actually a pretty exciting little team, but I don't know. I don't really see the effect of this money yet. Hopefully, I mean, it's very possible next year we'll see, right, with a couple of these big English teams coached by Mourinho and Guardiola. So maybe we'll see a resurgence of English football, but it's not apparent right now. But I think it's good for the sport if we have competition coming from England, given that they're the most watched league on the planet.
That's a good point. I think despite their struggles in Europe, their league is tremendously entertaining. Like, it's one of those things where you tune in and it could be any number of teams playing and it's just going to be a great game. It's just fast paced. Fans are great. You have to think at some point they're going to get it right with all that money. You can't see them failing every year. And if they do figure it out, I guess my concern would be how much resources is that going to draw away from La Liga? With, you know, like right now in today's day and age, if you look at the mid to bottom place teams in Europe compared to that in Spain, teams like, I don't know, anywhere from Deport to Celta to Sociedad, and if you compare that to England's, mid-tier teams, they're the ones that have money to sign players and kind of draw the talent away from the league. So that's what I would be concerned about. With all that money going into England, how much does it affect La Liga?
I agree with that. And we've actually seen English teams try to poach good Liga players, and then the players had a tough time traditionally transitioning to the English game. I think that it'll be interesting to see how, and in addition to this, how teams use the Leicester model and see what lessons they can take from Leicester's success to apply to their own teams. And that is what really worries me, that there's some secret sauce that Leicester has found, maybe if they're using analytics in a way that other teams haven't been, that maybe won't come as quickly to Spain, and we'll see Spanish sides being outclassed by teams that have caught on to what Leicester is doing. But I don't know. It's an interesting question, at least.
So these next set of questions are all post-Wolfsburg remontada. And the first question, which is not a unique question by any way, in any means, it's been asked at least half a dozen times in this mailbag. Sahil Jain, among many, many others, asks, are you still interested in selling Ronaldo? I don't know. I'm kind of I'm tired of answering this question. Do you want to have a go at this?
Yeah, man. I think that's a lot of people who are really excited to shove that in your face, Kian. I don't know. Am I still... I don't think any of us were saying we... I mean, like, maybe we were. Maybe we're saying sell him this year regardless of what happens. But I don't know. I think that Ronaldo... We all thought that Ronaldo was still a decisive player. And one of the points that Josh made was that regardless of whether... of anything, Ronaldo still brings in a tremendous amount of money through marketing. So maybe selling him isn't hugely a great idea. I think there is still a case to be made that it's better to get out a year early than a year late with aging players, but I'm not sure we're at the place where we're a year early yet. We may be 3 years early. So, you know, I think it's still an open question in my mind. I don't think yesterday, so what I'd say is I don't think in my mind yesterday changed anything other than just that he showed a great sense of his abilities, right? Like he's still a decisive player. And he still can bring that extra oomph to the game that certainly other players can't right now. But when we're talking about this subject, it's not based on individual matches. It's based on a long history and about much broader question, higher level question of when is the right appropriate time to cut ties with a legend, with a player who is at the top of his game. So,
right.
I don't know. I'm interested to hear what your take on this is, though.
I think it's really important to clarify, first of all, that Ronaldo is still a very important player in this team, and for lack of a better word, the dude just has massive balls. What he did against Wolfsburg, I mean, he literally put the team on his back and said, listen, I guaranteed a victory before the match, and I'm holding on to that promise. I'll do whatever it takes to get this team to the semifinals. And I think all of us, all the fans, all of us, all the fans, the organization, have to appreciate that and thank him for that, because I'm not sure any other player in the squad would have, if Ronaldo wasn't there, would have been able to come up that big and score a hat trick until now, the most important game of the season. So, and this is not a unique thing in Ronaldo by any means. He's done this in many times in his career. How many times has he scored a winning goal against Barcelona? That hat trick he scored with Portugal against Sweden to get them in the last World Cup, I think it was.
Yes, that's right.
He's a big game player, and there's no doubt about that. I guess regarding the question, do you want to sell him? Maybe let's revisit it at the end of the season.
I agree. So the point is never that it's when you're talking about long-term stuff, high-level long-term stuff, that it's never smart to take individual moments of brilliance and whatever. So let's imagine that someone says, well, you know, if you ask that question of us at a point in time where Ronaldo, I don't know, hadn't scored in a while, and he was saying all this junk about how he wanted to go play for Laurent Blanc at PSG. He said that earlier in the season, right? So, you know, people go through highs and lows, and we're going through a high right now. So let's evaluate with cooler heads. Though, again, I think it's an open question whether this is the season to do it or whether it's in the next couple. But it will happen eventually, and we do have to wrap our heads around that. And that's, I think, what we've been saying.
Yeah, exactly. And that was the other point that's important to make, is that it's not so much about this season. It's about when is the right time to part ways with him, to build for your future, to develop the other players in the squad that are coming up, like James, to avoid a situation like Casillas and Raul, for example.
Exactly.
So Zachary asks, worried about how out of the game Bale was? That's interesting. I guess Bale was relatively quiet in that match. It was also one of those games where there wasn't a whole lot of space, where Bale thrives in space. Having said that, I thought he was fine.
I agree with the premise of the question, but.
What's your take on this?
Yeah, I'm not sure I agree with the premise of the question. That being said, obviously this wasn't Bale's best game.
Yeah.
I don't know. The focus of the match didn't seem to be running through Bale in the way that it has in maybe some of the more recent matches. Like, obviously he was in Madrid's last couple of matches, Bale has been much better than he was against Wolfsburg. But, you know, I got the sense that the way Madrid was trying to play Wolfsburg was this high press with a lot of players moving up. That's actually not as much Bale's game, right? He likes to move vertically, have vertical space, right? So where he can take off on people and not, you know, it's not like he doesn't do this kind of pressing game well. He just, where Bale is probably the best in the world, if not one of the two or three best in the world, is when he has vertical space. Not what I mean, like, and then what I mean by that is literally, you know, vertical space on the side of the pitch, right? So where he can get up ahead of steam and kind of run at people, or get a ball in behind someone, or you know, cut in, you know, diagonally. And in games where you're playing a chunk of, you know, a big chunk of the match in the other team's third or the other team's half, there's just physically not as much space on the pitch for Bale to run. So,
yeah. Well, I also have to say that I've been impressed with how Bale has played lately in tight spaces. Like, for all the talk that, you know, he's not as technical as someone like, you know, for example, Messi, who can dribble in tight spaces, that Bale needs a lot of space. Having said that, he's actually looked quite comfortable in tight spaces, right? And there was a few instances against Wolfsburg where there wasn't a whole lot of space, and he's at two or three players around him, and he got out of it pretty well. And
Yeah. No, that's a great point. And it's something that when I say he likes it, it's clear that that's what he's, you know, kind of, that's it. That's his, how he developed his playing style for a lot of his career. But actually, I think this year has especially proved this year that he absolutely has the chops to maneuver himself in space. And that's why I wasn't really agreeing with the premise, because I thought even in a game where maybe there wasn't as much vertical space, Vail found a way to be, you know, to be in the match, to do some like impressive, you know, not just on the ball but off the ball movement, impressive take-ons when he had the ball. Sure. I agree. I really do think that Bale, especially this season, has really found his touch and found his ability to maneuver in these tight spaces.
Yeah. So Fab Femizi asks, how do we accommodate James on this roster, seeing his form has picked up again? I don't remember if he came on against Wolfsburg, did he?
I don't think so. I think the subs are Varane, Hesse, and I can't remember the last one.
Okay, but he did have a really nice game against Eibar.
Yes, he did.
I'm not sure how you can accommodate James on this roster. To me, the starting 11 looks very fixed, and the substitutions that Zidane makes are very reactory to what's happening in the game itself. So,
I know it sucks to say, but I think that you're right. I may just point out that I think the way to do it is to rotate and to say, well, you know, we're going to stick you one at one of the offensive trident spots and sit one of the three, and that's what happened with Eibar, I think. So, I mean, like, I thought that was a perfectly fine, good result. That's how you do it, right? And does he start the big matches? Probably not. But would I be devastated if he had to because of injuries or suspension? No, I wouldn't be, because he's still, like, he's putting in good performances right now. He's definitely, for example, ahead of Isco in my line. I mean, you know, in my if I were doing a depth chart right now.
Yeah, and I mean, there's a match against Getafe coming up, which Real Madrid should win very comfortably. Getafe have been just woeful this season, so. That's another opportunity that James will, at the very least, get a good chunk of minutes against and probably put in a good performance like he did against Eibar.
Yes.
But to your point, yeah, I think you're right that during big games, I don't see him starting unless there's injuries or something of that nature to the front three. So this next question, it was actually before we announced that you'll be answering mailbag questions. Despite this, I'm pretty sure this is directed at you. So,
all right.
Christopher McCormack asks, when is a new hashtag DonaldJPK quote coming?
Actually, I have an article that I wrote about that. So, yeah, you're going to get an article on it soon. I decided that I'm going to start doing those as a weekly question and answer type thing. So feel free to tweet me questions for my Donald J. PK quote question. Sometimes they'll be short because I won't have as much time, but I have a hell of a fun time writing them. So,
yeah, and this is something everyone should be looking forward to, because for those of you who have no idea, this is going to be amazing. And when Gabe brought up this idea in our staff Slack group, it was just everyone was overwhelmingly in favor of this idea. So we're very excited about this.
And this is for everyone who, like, I really detest Gerard Piqué's social media presence. And so if you're a Madrid fan, go take a look, follow him, or don't follow him, but, like, look him up on the different sites, and you'll see exactly why this joke is funny.
On a side note, how happy were you to see him walk up the pitch being knocked out of the Champions League?
It is the single happiest thing I took from that game, other than maybe the Atleti fans booing the Champions League anthem.
This next tweet is not a question. It's a statement.
Okay.
Steak Sandwich says, all I have to say is F-U-P-K. Great.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. Fair enough.
Fair enough. Rumil Karia asks, who would you rather face in the semis now that Barcelona is gone? So these questions now are all post-Atletico Barça match. So, and this is a very recurring question. We have four teams left: Man City, Bayern, Atletico, and Real Madrid. So I mean, how about this game? What do you think? What is your ideal path to the final here?
I mean, I think that look, these are all good teams. I think the team that I'd like is City. I think that I think that it's the obvious team that's the weakest of the bunch. Although I gotta tell you, Bayern has not looked particularly good, and they drew a pretty lucky way to go through against Benfica, who put two goals past them. So I would rather have either of those than Atleti, because I know that Atleti is going to be in an unbelievably anxiety-producing match. But I will say, I'm not devastated by any draw right now. I think that Madrid being here is great, and Madrid is, if not the favorite, one of the two favorites to go, you know, to be in the final and win the final. So who the hell knows? Hopefully, hopefully Madrid performs up to their standards. I think I think the easiest team is probably Manchester City. I don't know. Do you agree with that?
I 100% agree with that. Out of all three of those teams left, City are the ones that evoke the least amount of fear in me. They just haven't looked that sharp this season. But I actually, word for word, I actually agree completely with everything you said. I would rather have Bayern. So my ranking would go City, Bayern, and then Atletico. Bayern, in a weird way, I think we match up okay against, because Bayern will allow us to play a counter-attacking scheme. Atletico won't allow us to do that. Atletico will sit back, and I think Real Madrid, the more they have the ball, in a weird way, the harder it is for them to score, because it takes away their counter-attacking ability. Bayern will have the ball, and Real Madrid will be, I think, pretty comfortable just absorbing that and just unleashing on the counter like they did 2 years ago. So Atletico, no. I think Real Madrid will struggle. I'm not saying it's impossible. By all means, no. I think Atletico is a scary team to face, because they're so, so good at defending and not giving space at all. And you saw how Barcelona struggled against them.
I agree.
Yeah.
And I also think it's important to remember that this team was designed. It was designed to beat Pep Guardiola's style Barcelona. And when he moved to Bayern, it became designed to beat that Bayern team. And that's why Ancelotti in our decima season just dominated Bayern. And with Pep Guardiola on the way out, this Bayern side, I just don't know what. It seems like they're in a transition right now, whereas Real Madrid is building for the future. Bayern doesn't really know what their side's going to look like next year. Someone might leave, people will come in. In other past years, I might say that I'd rather have Atleti over Bayern, but this year it's more complicated, and I just don't see Bayern as formidable a foe, even as they were 2 years ago when we beat them in 14.
Right, and Benfica created a lot of problems against Bayern. And the interesting thing is, I tweeted this too. I think we match up better against Barcelona than we do against Atletico. Having said that, I still want Atletico to go through, because we discussed this in the last podcast.
Yeah.
We don't want Barcelona, the more Barcelona suffers, the better we feel, right?
Yes, and it's essentially regardless of who they're playing. And the amount of anxiety that the Barcelona match in the semis or final of the Champions League would produce in me is an order of magnitude higher than the level that I had with Atleti in the final in 14. So I'm just thankful that I'm just ecstatic that Barcelona is out of this competition simply for my own personal health.
Yeah, and it's amazing that even though, it was not us playing against Barca, my heart was racing through that entire match against Calderon. One, it was one of the best games I've watched, non-Real Madrid games I've watched in a long time. It was just so much drama, so much adrenaline. Atletico were just, I felt, playing out of their minds. And Barcelona was struggling to get anything going. And look, if you're able to stifle arguably one of the best front three of all time, you know, over two legs like that, that, you know, speaks volumes to how good Simeone has this team defending. Like, their defense is no joke and it's no fluke. It truly is like something bizarre. It's abnormally good and it's not easy to break down. And they're so comfortable playing like that. It's their identity. You know, they don't get restless or impatient. So
that's right. And over two legs, that's a very worrisome strategy for any team. Like, I mean, the fact is that they are the best position team in the entire world to defend a 1-0 game. So going into that second leg against Barca, I actually thought, hell, all Atleti need is one goal, and I don't see why they can't shut down Barca, who have, yeah, despite everything in the last couple of days, Barca still has had one of the most prolific offenses in all of football. So I don't see why Atleti couldn't shut that down for just one game, right? Just that full defense, full. And, like, people, interesting, and we don't have to talk about this now, Cam, but it's an interesting thing to talk about this Atleti, because it's very rare that people use the phrase Catenaccio to talk about this Atleti team. But it does seem to me that they are the outgrowth of these great defensive Italian sides. And I don't mean that as a negative thing. I actually think it's a very impressive and beautiful thing to see when it's done right. And I think one thing is true, that they do have a slightly more dynamic attack. Though, again, they haven't scored that many goals. They just have really not conceded that many goals. So it's an interesting way. But I just feel like people rarely talk about Atleti as a side and use the word Catenaccio when they're talking about it.
That is definitely the first time I've ever heard anyone describe it as Catenaccio, but it completely makes sense. You're right. I actually find it a bit more entertaining than Catenaccio was. Like the Italian, like traditional,
right.
Like let's say Juve or Inter.
There's less drama in the defending of Juve and Inter. I'll say that. They're much more, like, if you think about Fabio Cannavaro, like probably the best defender I've ever seen, he was the least fussed defender I've ever. He would just always be able to shut stuff down if necessary, and it just was not that big a deal. It's an incredible talent that, despite Atleti's incredible defenders, I'm not sure that they possess quite as well. They're just always there, always physically in your face, which is less of the Catenaccio style.
Yeah. I mean, you talk about this Real Madrid team being built to beat Barcelona and Guardiola and Bayern. Atletico are basically built to beat, like, just really good teams, if you think about it. Like, their style of play is just the way they absorb. If you look back to Barcelona, how they've been knocked out, like, I think maybe 4 out of the last 8 to 10 years against Atletico, a team that parked the bus and just knew how to defend. Inter, Mourinho's Inter, Chelsea, 2012. It's like, it's a very common trait.
Yeah.
You know. So, I mean, it is interesting. It's not an easy system to play against, no matter how many world-class players you have, how many game changers.
That's right.
In this case, you know, arguably one of the best players of all time, if not the best. Even if you have those players, if you have a system, if you're playing against a defensive system that really knows what it's doing, is patient and systematic and just knows how to frustrate you, it's very difficult to score against them. So, where are we? We've spent a lot of time.
There haven't been any questions about Casemiro yet.
You just wait, my friend. Drew Mil Caria, his second question in this mailbag asks, the Casemiro, Kroos, Modric midfield hasn't really created much offensively. If you were to play James or Isco, who would you bench?
It's a great question. I agree, and I think it's that you're onto something by saying that there's an issue here. Luckily, it hasn't been a huge problem because Madrid still has a very prolific front line that can produce almost on their own. But yeah, I mean, if you look at the way Casemiro, I mean, it's something we've said at the very beginning with him that, even in the Barcelona game, right, the way Casemiro moves the ball, his kind of impatience on the ball and his he's not a great, I mean, like, he just isn't a great passer, right? Like, he's a guy who you can screw up by messing up a little bit with his timing, getting in his face, and that's kind of what Barcelona did. So Madrid bypassed him in attack. Almost all of Casemiro's passes went backwards in almost every game you'll see with him. And that is negative when, I actually think it's very negative when, you know, for Madrid, if Madrid is playing against a team that is going to try to sit back. So let's say Madrid draws Bayern, maybe Casemiro should, I think Casemiro probably should start that match. But let's say Madrid draws Atleti. I mean, I'm not sure Casemiro is the answer in a match against Atleti. Or maybe even City. I think we'd have to watch a little bit more about City to see how they're going to come at Madrid. But it's an interesting question. Kian, what do you feel like? I mean, do you feel like I'm onto something here?
No, I do. It's a conversation worth having for sure. I mean, how do you? My gut feeling is that Zidane has decided this is the way to go moving forward until the end of the season. The other way to look at it is, I know that a lot of people before the match against Wolfsburg were saying, you know, we need goals. Why don't we put James instead of Casemiro? The flip side to that argument is that if Real Madrid had to have conceded, it would have been game over. They would have had to score 4 goals.
Yes.
So you would have needed someone like Casemiro to have that security.
I agree.
And as harder as it might have been to score with him on the field, you really had to approach this game as if it was a 0-0 league game, basically, because if you go out guns blazing and put James in there and Wolfsburg nick a goal, it's done. So
I agree. I can't tell you how important that is to remember about this match, that the power of the away goals rule in the Champions League is something that other sports really don't understand. Like, if you haven't been following this sport for your whole life, this is the most powerful, weird rule in, I think, all of sports. Because what it does is it makes the situation where you're just right, that the single goal by Wolfsburg ends that tie. So you can't concede. And I couldn't agree with you more that the appropriate choice for that match was Casemiro. I understand why people were saying that you can't have him, but the depth that he brings to Madrid's defense, simply in his ability to clog the center of the pitch and be a physical presence that really stops up the other side's central attack, is, you know, it outweighs any marginal benefit that you get from playing a creative midfielder in that role. I totally agree.
So you mentioned, you know, do we play Casemiro? Maybe we reevaluate this against a game against Atletico where we need to break down in defense. But the other flip side to that is, if you remember that first game against Atleti earlier in the fall, in the Calderon, and Casemiro started.
Yes.
We all kind of looked at that as Casemiro's breakout game, in the sense that he was the one dude that just was physically imposing against a very aggressive Atletico team who likes to rattle you physically. And Casemiro was the one guy who wasn't backing down, and he was kind of frustrating them a bit.
Yeah,
in that sense, if there's like a mental or physical battle that might shake Atletico a bit, maybe Casemiro can do that. Who knows?
And maybe the answer is that Zidane just has to have a quick trigger finger, because in these, and another thing the away goal rule does is it makes it so that if you're away from home, you actually can concede. And the key thing is not to keep a clean sheet when you're away, but it's to score at least once. So if let's say Madrid draws Atleti or whoever, in the away leg, Madrid will need to score. You got to score there. So maybe like he can start Casemiro to kind of counteract Atleti's intensity. But if Madrid hasn't scored by, like, I would say minute 55, he absolutely has to get his. He has to turn that match into a game where Madrid's going to attack. And that's a crucial thing for me. And it's not like Zidane doesn't know that. Zidane understands this stuff very, very acutely, I'm sure.
Yeah. So, bit of a, I guess, digression. This question is from Chris Santoso. He asks, I've been reading a lot about Odegaard to Bayern. Do we sell him with a buyback in 2 to 3 years, or loan him to a Premier team?
I don't sell him. If there's a team that's willing to take him on loan, maybe, but I don't know. I kind of remember when he was signed, and other people might know this better. You might know it better, but I thought there might be something in his contract that actually said he has to come, he has to play, he has to be with Madrid and practicing with the first squad, and that contract provision might be something that would be hard to work around in a loan deal. I don't know. I just something to keep in mind. But in my ideal world, if Castilla don't earn promotion, we loan him, and I think Castilla are going to earn promotion. So why not keep that team together and let them work together in the second division? That's a big deal, right? I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, I agree. And
I mean, he's 17 years old, right? Like,
yeah.
He's like, in 7 years, he will be around the age where you might start saying he's like at his peak performance level. That's how long like away he is as a project.
Right. Selling him would be bizarre now. Selling him to Bayern Munich would be even more bizarre, because what are they going to do with him? They're not going to play him.
They were the guys that wanted him from us in the first place. Like, it was Madrid and Bayern were the two teams that were fighting over him. And I just, the idea of selling him to Bayern makes no sense. What are they going to do? Just stick him on their second team, like, or have him ride the bench for Ancelotti? No.
Yeah, no, I'm with you there. So CR7 asks, this is an interesting question. As opposed to a month ago, what do you guys think are our chances of winning silverware now?
Well, CR7, that's obviously things are improved. The silverware that we might win, not only might Madrid win the Champions League, which seems much more likely now than it did a month ago, Madrid might win the league. I mean, like, the Liga is wide open right now because of Barca's absolute collapse. Madrid are within 4 points. That is one Barca draw and a loss, or two Barca draws, and Madrid is level on points. Obviously, Atleti is also there too, but this Liga is suddenly a much more complicated thing. So yeah, obviously Madrid has increased their odds. Now, did that increase the odds from like 10% to like 15%? I think that might be more where we're talking, maybe 10% to 25%. But still, that's a significant change, right?
Are you surprised at all at how dramatically this season has turned around in the past couple of weeks?
I mean, it'd be pretty insane not to be surprised. I think that anyone who follows the history of the Champions League knows that it's an incredibly hard thing to do to win. It's never been done in the modern Champions League history, back-to-back wins. Let's say it doesn't shock me that Barcelona are out of this competition, is what I'll say. The Liga is what really is shocking. But I don't know. I'm shocked. I'm shocked by the way the Liga has turned around in just a few days.
Yeah, it's amazing how things have just changed really dramatically. I don't think anyone would have picked. Yeah, good point. I think Atletico beating Barca, even that I wasn't expecting, because Barca had beaten them, 2-1 every game for the past 7 matches or something ridiculous. And I gotta say, like, it's really incredible in how much Barcelona collapsed in this 1 week. And just the roller coaster of emotions, losing 2-0 in Wolfsburg right after beating Barcelona and then Camp Nou, and then coming back and then beating Wolfsburg 3-0. It was a roller coaster. Pretty amazing stuff. And this is something that Josh brought up in a few podcasts ago. Even if Real Madrid don't win the league, which is still not entirely likely, but there is a chance now. Even if they don't win the league,
a chance is a huge difference from what it was a month ago.
Yeah. Yeah, and even if they don't win the league, it was enough to make Barcelona sweat, which no doubt put a toll on them in terms of stress levels in the Champions League. I think it did anyway. Because it just makes you sweat, and it, you know, you couldn't,
yep,
you couldn't rest your players maybe like as much as you wanted to. So I don't know. It may be, maybe I'm just naive thinking it did affect them psychologically in the Champions League, having that rough patch in the league. Either way, it definitely rattled them.
Yep. I agree.
So we have two more questions left here. Trekartista asks, what does the future hold for Kovacic and what identity should Zizou carve out for us? The Kovacic thing is an interesting one because he just fell off the map.
Right. And it wasn't like he was bad, and it didn't seem that there was any reason for him. It's just that Zidane, I think that part of the issue is that Zidane decided that Casemiro is the guy, so that and has really not rotated that much. Like those two, like, I'm sorry, that he, one, he decided that Casemiro is the guy, and two, he hasn't rotated that much, and when he has, he's been focused, because of the Casemiro choice, on getting his other star offensive players into the match, to the extent that Kovacic has not been required. That being said, Modric, not everyone, no, I'm not even going to say this. I'm not going to say it.
You got to say it now.
All right. Oh, everyone has to, like, knock on wood or whatever, but Modric and Kroos have not had huge injury issues. And it seems to me that the obvious person to slot in for a Modric mate would be a Kovacic in this situation.
And I agree with that.
God forbid Modric gets an injury right now. He is a crucial part of this team. But if he were to go down, then I think we would see Kovacic come back. And I don't think it'd be that. Like, I think that Zidane would do that. So,
yeah, I don't think there's anyone else in this squad that can do what Modric does. If we're going down the depth chart, like, I don't think James or Isco can replicate his work rate, his positioning all over the pitch, his, you know, box to box presence the way Kovacic can.
Yep.
So. Yeah, the rotation has certainly been tight now that Zidane has figured out who his lineup is. And then you have, if you think about it, the depth chart is pretty ridiculous now. I didn't think it was that ridiculous when Rafa was in charge, but Zidane makes it look ridiculous.
And that's the thing, right? That's why for a lot of this, for a lot of this period of time, I've been saying, actually, Madrid had an incredibly good offseason. They brought in a lot of great play. It was one of the best offseasons I've seen as a fan of this team. The only real miss was the coach. But they have a great depth chart. I mean, can you imagine if Ancelotti last year with that team that was running roughshod over everyone had this depth chart when the inevitable injuries came? I'm floored by how good this team, how deep this team is. And, you know, everyone always talks about how how Madrid's going to buy XYZ player. But, God, I don't know if anyone is necessary for this side other than maybe a left back, right? But, I mean, obviously people will come in and I'm sure there are questions about it or we'll talk about it on the next podcast, but this is a great team. This is a deep team.
Yeah, no, you bring up a great point. And it will be very interesting to see if Zidane actually gets, you know, full autonomy on signings this summer to see how much different that would look if he has most of the input on how he wants to build his team. Because I feel like he would, you know, feel similar where this team doesn't need a huge revolution of sorts or having to incorporate an entirely new system or star. Having said that, you know, this is Real Madrid, so we can't answer this question right now, I guess. But
this
is the last question, and it comes from Donald Nahara. And Donald Nahara asked this exact same question in the last mailbag where Mike and I did, and I think he didn't listen to that podcast because we did answer this. But Donald, I'm going to give you one more chance. You got to listen to this, okay? Because this is the last time we're going to address it.
Stop. If you ask this question again, we will not read another question of yours ever on the show.
That's harsh, but okay, let's roll with it. Donald asks, how is Lucas Silva doing at Marseille? Please reply. We did reply, bro. We did.
Listen to the show.
Lucas Silva, to reiterate from previous podcasts, I have not seen the French league at all this season, let alone seeing how Lucas Silva is doing. I reached out to a couple of respectable journalists. One was Mohamed Ali from French Football Weekly. The other was Jonathan Johnson, who works for ESPN and covering the French league. both of them express that Lucas Silva's been not only not good, but just actually atrocious. And both were quite surprised to see how bad they were doing, how bad Lucas Silva was doing. And he's actually fourth choice right now.
Yeah. There was a lot of conversation at one point about whether he was going to be dropped off of the, I think it was one of their European rosters. He is just, I'm not going to say anything else than that because I don't know, but I do know that there was a lot of conversation and it was reported on in Spain that he was not in even in the first choice 11 for Marseille, and that there was some conversation about whether they should even include him on the squad that they would travel to these European matches, which is pretty bad.
Yeah, that's a bit of an astonishing drop off. I wasn't expecting some kind of, you know, superstar breakout season from him, but I certainly wasn't expecting him to drop off this badly, which is too bad. Hopefully he can recover from that. He's still young. And that's the end of the mailbag.
All right, man, it was fun.
I gotta say thanks, Gabe, for doing this. And
happy to come on. I wanted to chat. What a crazy couple of days, dude. What a crazy couple of days. And I'm very excited to hear what people have to say. And to see all the exciting articles. Just a quick plug again. I have this Donald J. PK jokey article. You can send me questions, and I will answer them as Donald J. PK. And you should also read all the great stuff we've been writing. I think, in particular, Ohm wrote a very interesting article about Madrid's tactics in the second Wolfsburg match that I think is worth reading. So.
Yeah, Donald J. PK column is going to be epic. Ohm's tactical stuff is great. Tomorrow morning is the Champions League draw, so stick with us. Lucas will be posting that immediately as it happens, reaction and everything. And guys, if you enjoyed this, please rate us on iTunes. It would mean a lot to us. 5-star rating, of course. And we appreciate you guys listening to the show, and we appreciate all your questions. So. From Gabe and myself, take care and Hala Madrid.
Hala Madrid.